This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Demers, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. So this week, I have a very special guest, Brad Templin with Scott's USave, with a couple locations out in the Midwest. But the reason why this is an important one is Brad took me up in the offer. I always talk about this guy. I said, if you have a topic you want to hear talk about or you want to be a guest on here, shoot me an email. So Brad did probably about a week or so ago, reached out. Brad is fourth generation in this industry, second generation in his shop. But talking about what it's like to take over a business, to go away to college, to come back, to work with your mom, to private equity, had an awesome conversation with Brad. Awesome conversation about his business and what he's got going on. And I know it resonates with a lot of you in family businesses. So I hope you enjoy this. Before we get into that, I want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Remember, just like what I said about Brad coming on here, if you have a question, idea for a future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Don't forget my new book, Beyond the Bays, available now on Amazon for Kindle and for paperback. And want to talk to me about accounting tax services for your repair shop, shoot us a text at 301-307-5413. Last but not least, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors for being such loyal supporters of the show. If you need to get your back office under control, give Alex at Wickedfile a call. And if you need to recruit top talent for your top shop, give Promotive a call. If you're looking for a full-service staffing solution that does everything from sourcing, qualifying, creating job descriptions, scheduling interviews, to negotiating job offers, Promotive is your answer. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. Turn chaos into clarity with Wickedfile, the AI for auto repair shops. Transform invoices into insights, protect cash flows, and stop losing parts, cores, or credits to maximize your bottom line. Get Wickedfile. Super excited today here. I got Brad Templin joining me from Scott's USave and a couple different locations, Indiana, Illinois, all over the place. Brad is fourth generation in this industry, you know, second generation at this specific moment. But the reason why Brad is on here is, like I always say every single week, if you have a story, if you have a question you want to hear about, reach out to me. Brad did. Brad and I have been talking. I was kind of joking before because his first thing was, I'm not sure if this idea resonates with your listeners. But proceeded to tell me a story about, you know, taking over a second generation family business, the struggles of going to work with your parents, and maybe even some of this in today's day and age of why is the next generation not even looking to these shops and, you know, private equity is coming around. So super excited to have Brad on here. We already had a really good conversation here and I got a little bit of his background. But yeah, first and foremost, Brad, just want to thank you for coming on here and do a little introduction of yourself and Scott's USave and what you guys are about.
Sure. And I think right back to you. Thank you for hosting things like this and pushing this info out to all of us. I know I learn things throughout the year with these podcasts and such. So excited for anyone listening. If this resonates with you and you take action, that's my hope. But yeah, for us, we're in our 45th year as a company. My dad started this business. Like you said, my great grandfather is the one who got us into automotive. And unfortunately, my dad passed when I was real little and my mom stepped in the 90s. Which wasn't too common in automotive back then, and had run the company from then until 2018 is when I started to come back to the business. And I really, until about 2017 spring or time, I'd never really thought that I would be working in the business ever. She was actually at that point really starting to look at an exit strategy, looking at what does the next step look like for her, being that retirement was on the door. And so it came back just reached out to her, said, what do you think about me coming back? She said, sure, let's do a 2-year trial, see if you like it. Don't feel bad if you say I want to leave or whatnot. Came back. I've been here now 8 years, so I didn't leave. And we've continued to grow. And she just had a great foundation. My dad built a great foundation. And I've just been really lucky with that.
Yeah. So what's your story, Brad, other than buying and selling sweet trailers?
The one who got us all into this is my great grandfather. And so he was working for an engine company at the turn of the 19th century. And he just had the crazy idea back then that these things are going to break and you're going to need individual parts to service them. So he went to his boss and said, I think we should start a parts division of the company and not just make engines solely. And he said, you know what? I think it's even bigger than that. I think we need to make a solely different company that's a parts company and solely have an engine company. So in 1919, he started Motive Parts Company of America is how it started. And then him and his boss kind of had differing views as they grew. So his boss thought that you would just need a single warehouse per, you know, large metro area. So they had Chicago, Indy, Detroit, Toledo, and maybe one other.
I was kind of wondering how you got your locations, because I was like looking you up to be like, well, let me say where he's from. I'm like, wait, these are all kind of spread, you know, along the lakes, but, you know, not in one state.
Yeah. So it wasn't truly like a transfer too much related to that, besides just that opened the door to automotive for us. And then him and his boss split ways. And he said, I think that we need to have, sure, these large warehouses, but then kind of a hub and spoke system to service our customers.
Really ahead of its time.
Yeah. And this was probably right at that point. I don't know. Maybe late 20s or 1930.
And then flash forward 100 years later, this is what private equity is doing to our industry. Hub and spoke. I mean, either my client's the hub or the spoke of it. But yeah, we're seeing this all across the country.
So him and his boss, but partner at that time now, said, you know what? Let's just split. You take Chicago. I'll take the other stuff. You grow how you want to grow. I'll grow how I want to grow. And then it became Motive Parts of Chicago. And he grew it to about 12 warehouses and was kind of the first parts distributor of Chicago, really. My grandfather and all of his brothers worked in the company. My father did work, I mean, like at a young age, and all of his male cousins worked in the business as well. And then my dad was the first one to leave the business and just kind of said, you know, I'm sitting behind all my uncles. Then I have a number of cousins that are a little bit older than me, too. I don't know really, I guess, a defined career path for me here or what this all is going to look like in another 20 years. And he had some money and went and bought a 2-bay gas station. And that's how we started. So I'm fourth generation in automotive, but I am the first generation to not work at Motive Parts.
Second generation. Yeah. Because even your dad, you know, it was like, hey, you got your start at Motive on it. And this is truly where you're like, I only know the aftermarket. I only know the service side of it. And now, how did you end up getting it? Did your dad pass away?
My dad passed away when I was actually really little. And so my mom's been running it for 24 years.
Super cool. That's also a unique story. Because like, again, when I saw this, I looked you up on a little bit. I already had an idea in my mind, right? Brad's at college, dad gets really sick. He has to come in and kind of save the family business. But your mom had been running this family business for years before you even stepped in. And then you guys are now running it together?
Yes. So my dad passed when I was 6, my sister was 3. And my mom is just superwoman and stepped up and raised us, ran the business, grew it over time. So at that point, it was the gas station was standalone. My dad had built a 5-bay tire center up the street. So from 81 to 96, we were like Discount Tire. We just did tires. And then obviously we had the gas. And then in 95, broke ground on the property that we'd owned and added on 10 bays to the 5 bays just to handle demand and then brought on full service at that time too.
Super cool.
And then, yeah, my mom's been doing it since then. And I think really she was just trying to keep the boat afloat at the start and then ended up falling in love with the industry herself.
You came from a long line of, you know, repair shop owners, automotive industry, and the things of stuff like that. One of my first questions, and you kind of mentioned it, was this ever the plan? So growing up in a, you know, entrepreneurial household or people that were self-employed from an early age, was that something that was pushed on you? Like, did you always think that you were going to go in and be your own boss, just not in this industry? And then the same flip side, obviously your dad was pretty young, but from your mom's point of view, like, did she want the life of being self-employed for you, or did she not really care or something in between?
So I will give it to my mom for sure. She, from always, myself and I have a younger sister, kind of right, just that 90s childhood of you can do whatever you want. Go to a good school, do well, get good grades. And right, I think in the 90s, it was, you know, go work for a Fortune 500, work your way up to a cushiony job. You know, you don't have the stress of at times, do you make payroll or not? I think that's what a lot of founders worry about. And, you know, that was just like the 90s. I feel like growing up was, yeah, why would you do this when you should go to school and get a technical degree of some kind, engineering, coding, whatever, and go work for one of these large companies and hopefully don't have the stress that I had. And I feel like talking to other second generation, that was kind of the story we heard. To her credit, never pushed it on me, never said, you know, this is a great opportunity or you should come do this or, you know, your father would want you to do this, nothing like that. When you say if I wanted to be an entrepreneur, I would probably say yes. And I don't know if I really, though, as I got older, thought of being an entrepreneur, but I kind of joke. I always wanted to be like a C-suite. Honestly, the dream job for me was being like CFO of GE Aviation. That would have been my dream job.
Well, it's kind of like you hit a really interesting thing there that I think a lot of, you know, previous generations, whether it's second, third, you know, going to the third or fourth or whatever, don't want people to struggle. I think that most of these businesses, even the successful ones, they're like, yeah, I make a lot of money on this, but this is not necessarily the life I choose for someone else. How did you come about looking at this and being like, I think that this is something I'm going to get into? Like, you've seen it firsthand. You probably saw the ups and the down. When did you decide like, hey, you know what? There's more to this than being a CFO. I actually want to go in there and work in a shop.
Yeah. So it was a guy I worked with who'd we become friends with. On top of that, too, I will say the first place I went to work after college was family owned. Granted, they were over 1,000 employees, locations outside of the U.S. even. But just that family atmosphere, that connectedness to a founder's vision and such, and really just took care of their employees. So him and I went back to get our MBAs and back to that CFO C-suite. That was what I really planned. Okay, went to Purdue. Now I'm going to University of Michigan. I'm getting my MBA. I have an engineering, you know, undergrad. I'm checking all these boxes that, you know, everyone said, like, if you put this on your resume, that gets you a good job, right? And not even thinking about what's the job or what's the career or what do I like? What's, I think, too, again, right? Younger, you're good at numbers. It's, you go be an engineer. And so I, again, did all that. And I wouldn't change it. I love having those experiences. And I don't discredit anybody who's doing that either. That is an important career or path. But I do think that looking back on it, it probably wasn't always the best path for me. My buddy was the one who said it. I was looking at interviewing outside of our company. I looked at Mitsubishi Electric. They make starters and the components like that. I looked at GE Aviation. They were actually a client of mine at the previous company. So had some connections there. And almost to your point or what I said earlier, he goes, you know, from the outside, it sounds like country clubs and golf carts and right executive dinners. But that's such a small percentage that really ever even get to that, right? Like when you go to these companies and you have this resume you just talked about, there's 1,000 other people that have that same resume. They're all equally qualified. So I'm not discrediting that you can't go do this. I'm just telling you that there's going to be some luck. There's going to be some timing. There's going to be some just meeting the right person or the right person likes you. And there might be some times where you get passed over. It really is, you know, you just got to take it on the chin that person was just equally qualified and that's who they went with. And I never looked at it that way. I always thought if you worked hard, you got, you're right, check the boxes, it just, you continued to go up. And I think that's even, again, back to like stereotype this like 90s era. But I just feel like that's what we, growing up in the 90s, that's what we were told. And he was the one who said, I think you give this family thing a shot.
Are you tired of spending endless hours searching for the perfect talent to join your team? Promotive is your full-service automotive staffing solution. At Promotive, we believe in being more than just a recruiting agency. We become an extension of your team, working tirelessly to ensure we place the right talent with the right shops. With our always-be recruiting mindset, we're constantly seeking out the best professionals in the industry. We manage 90 to 95% of the recruiting process, taking the burden off your shoulders. When you partner with Promotive, you gain a dedicated recruiter and account manager who will work closely with you, understanding your unique requirements and seeking out candidates who fit seamlessly into your shop's culture. We'll ensure that every candidate we present is thoroughly vetted and aligned with your needs. With Promotive, you'll have a peace of mind knowing that we're handling the recruitment process with expertise and precision. We don't just match resumes, we match character, culture, and long-term success. Visit our website at gopromotive.com today and experience the power of Promotive's expertise and dedication. Together, we'll build a stronger and more successful team.
Every month, auto repair shops can lose over $20,000 in uncredited parts, cores, and lost profits. Wicked Files' AI-powered software is a game changer. It helped one shop owner recover over $10,000 in missed credits, and others have recovered tens of thousands more. Wicked File puts cash back into your business and hours back into your day. Stop leaving money on the table. Visit wickedfile.com to learn more and get started today. One side, I think you always said, like, you could always go back to the other side. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's perceived risk. I mean, you know, not to get political, but everyone thought if you had a federal job, like, you could never get fired. And then again, you know, over the last 12 months, we've seen people lose their job. And so the perceived safety of, oh, you have a C-suite job, you still have a boss, you still have the politics of dealing with that. So there's definitely intricacies on either side of this. If you could go back in time, because you started in this business, you left the business and you came back to it in some capacity, do you think that if you could go back and start again, that you would have changed that? Would you have maybe not went to your MBA? Would you have still went to college? Or knowing what you know now, would you have just said, you know what, I probably just would have, you know, stuck with the shop and just went full on?
Yeah, I will say I'm a little nostalgic, or a little like fate maybe, that there's a part of me that goes, you know, if I changed that, what else might have been changed along the way? And you know, not to get sobby or whatnot. Like, one thing I do think about, because I get that question from time to time, you know, I met my wife because of where I lived and moving around and right going after that other career path. So I always kind of joke, you know, when I've met my wife, right? It's like, you can always look back and say, well, if I did this. And I think, you know, one thing I'd always tell anybody is, like, if it's been bad or good or whatever the past is, like, if you're somewhere you feel you have an opportunity, just be happy that you got that. Because there's a lot of ways that that couldn't have happened. So I don't know if I would change all that. I do think that what has for sure changed is now, so now I have children of my own. They're young, but I don't think that I would, or that I will push them or present things in a way like it was presented to myself and just friends and colleagues and whatnot as we grew up. And I think that, you know, I know a lot of friends that their dads owned plumbing companies or construction companies, or, you know, these, and we were all going off to college to get these degrees, which again, it somewhat worked out for a lot of us, but right, it's like, was that really the most direct route, or how much time or money might have been wasted along that path?
Now, what do you think, because your mom had been running the business for 20 couple of years before you even came back in there. So college boy came back, had a lot of ideas, right? You got an MBA behind your name. What was the biggest thing? And I don't want to say like something silly, but like, what was the biggest thing that you coming in just from like an outsider's point of view with this, you know, experience that you have? What was the biggest thing that you were able to kind of teach or impart on your mom of like, I know we've done it like this. I used to think that was the way too. And here's how we're going to do this now, that really made a difference.
I actually think flip. I have the utmost respect for my mom. She's incredibly hardworking, and still to this day, at the size that we have grown to, her favorite thing to do is you can't get her off the counter. She loves being a service advisor, right? But to her credit, I think she saw that I was going to have to work completely up. So my first 8 months or so, I was just in the shop. I did 6 months as a tire tech, doing oil changes, tires. I really was a tech, working 5 days a week, no different schedule than everyone else. I worked Saturdays for my first probably 3 years in the company. I do believe that that really set the tone for everyone else. To your point that, like, if he does bring us ideas now, if he does say, hey, let's try this, that it's not just this random outsider who thinks he's better than everyone else. So really at the start, it was at just learning the business, the guys, the culture, the equipment. And, you know, after that, it was really, for me, I think it was just, okay, let's look at things from a productivity standpoint and maybe just putting some numbers to things.
Like, you guys are doing this the right way. You guys might not even know that you guys have practice and procedures. Let's get some standardization to it. But the one thing I love is, you know, how can you come in here with all these ideas when you don't understand what it is actually doing right now? So like the buy-in from the team, and also probably the overall ideas from actually being boots on the ground and in, you know, the trenches and in the base with the guys, is probably immense. Like, Brad did go to college, but Brad's been out here. Like, he knows that that lift is broken, or he knows that this needs to be changed around, or that we can't mark this up enough. So did you see the shift in the team? Like, do you think that that paid dividends later on just from like a cultural side of things?
Yeah, I mean, still to this day, it's paying dividends. And again, back to my mom, just credit of her. There were so many employees that had been with her long term that knew me. I mean, some of them had been working for the company longer than I'd been alive at that point. There's some of, you know, quite a few of them that had known me since well before high school, you know, as a little kid running around on the weekends or whatnot. So I think that they were probably just like, oh, okay, he actually is serious about this. He wants to do it. And then there was other, you know, handful of people or whatever sector of the employees that never had seen me before, because I had been living out of state for almost 10 years at that point. And they didn't really know like what my deal was. I had one guy come up to me after I'd been there months, and he said, so what's your deal? Did you just graduate like tech school, or like, oh no, I just decided to come back and work for my mom. And I have a little baby face. So I think even at the time he was younger than me, and he goes, well, how old are you? I was like, oh, whatever, 27 or something. He's like, what? So I think that too just made them realize like
I'm serious about this.
I don't want to just come here because I think this is the easiest paycheck.
And that's big. And we see a lot of people coming from outside the industry, and like, you know, that's really the two schools of clients I have. I have people like you from the industry, you know, been in the shots, been on the counter. They understand this, right? A lot of these guys have a passion for it. I also have a lot of people that were in software sales, and they looked at auto repair shops because that's the best return on investment. And so like when I see the long-term success of it, you know, there's a ton of numbers, productivity and all of this, but really what it comes down to is people will work for some people, they won't work for others. And if your guys won't show up, they won't crank out hours, they won't ultimately be productive, then yeah, if your team doesn't like you or respect you, you're not going to have a profitable shop. Also, you know, how many people do you see, especially the size that you guys have gotten to with multiple locations? You know, if you get too far removed from what people are doing on a day-to-day basis, I don't think that you can probably make the right, you know, changes for the team. All of this sounds well and good, and it sounds like it's all been roses. How do you bring that up? Was this something that your mom brought up? Was this something that you proposed of, I've been here a while, I'm going to get an ownership? Or was this something that even before you came back that you said, ultimately, you know, I'd like to buy you out?
So I will say from the start, we didn't really have those conversations. I really think that at that point it was, I kind of knew like if I was going to make this a career, I was going to outlive her in a sense of career and probably herself even, right?
Just the numbers of it, of like some, yeah.
Right. That's so, you know, in one way or another, it was going to come to me. Obviously, like I said, I do have a sister. She's never been active in the business. So there's some pieces to that. But I even mentioned this in a LinkedIn post, or even when people ask me things, is, and I give it to my mom that she's been, have enough pride, enough respect for herself and myself, that I think she's looked at me the last handful of years as, you know, we're becoming more partners than it was, you know, she's the owner, I'm the kid, I'm just running around having fun. And so I think that, and back to what we just talked about with that, learning from the ground up, respect, all that is, I think that she finally realized, you know, after a number of years, it wasn't even months, it was years. I think she realized too, like, okay, he really is committed to, like, if the world ended tomorrow or whatever, right? Like Armageddon shows up, he's going to do whatever it takes to keep the place open.
Yeah, I mean, and you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we got to give credit to your mom. I mean, obviously, you sound like a great guy, but it takes two to tango. You can be the nicest person in the world. If you don't have a parent that wants to have this conversation, it's really hard. That's like, if you want to say what's going to make listeners angry is like your relationship with the generation you're buying out is not the norm that we hear. It really gets really strange. It really gets kind of awkward towards the end. Have you guys had a conversation of like, hey, mom, at some point I need you to kind of completely give the reins over to me? Or have you given her the carte blanche of like, hey, you know what? As long as you continue to show up, I'm going to have you here. Then the day that you don't want to, then you don't.
Yeah. You know, I think that it's a lot of unspokenness, which is the hard part of family business, right?
Family, right? That's family, right? You still can only talk about so much.
Right. So then to even throw another curveball into this that we haven't talked about yet is my stepdad came back into the business as well about 3 years ago.
All right. See, we love this drama, Brad. See, this is what the listeners want to hear. Give the stepdad, give the step siblings that want ownership. Yep.
I mean, my stepdad came into my life when I was 17. So, you know, we're getting close to 20 years now. But again, to her respect, right, at the end of the day, back then it really was like her way or the highway if she wanted it to be. But she came to me first and said, what do you think about this? This is something I'm thinking about. This is why I think it could work and make sense and could be a good opportunity or whatnot. And I mean, I truly do love my stepdad. He's even harder worker than the two of us. I mean, that guy will work 7 days a week just in his DNA. But again, back to that three-headed snake, though. Now it's like there is another head to the snake, though, right? Because there is that. He's still in the business, still has his role, his duties and such, but he's still a part of the family too, right? I just think that I'm very lucky that my mom has just had this trust in me. And to your point, right, of like, hey, as long as you're showing up or this, I don't feel like I ever think that she's not maybe pulling her weight or this or that. Because, two, the other thing that, so then there's the flip side of it, right, is that I feel like I've just worked and proven to her that I'm serious and I'm just as committed to this as you. And then on that flip side, you know, she's made the large investments for us to grow. So we are blessed that we don't have any debt on the books. Even through this expansion since 2019 is when we started acquiring shops. And so then I think that that flip side is right, that I give that respect back of she believed in obviously herself and the business and that, but I think there was somewhat a large belief that I think Brad does have some good ideas. I do think him and I can pull this off. And, you know, she's bankrolled that to an extent, right? And so I think that there's that unspoken mutual respect because of that. Like, he's going to take care of it. He's going to make sure we're profitable. I'm still making money. And if I'm still making money, I'm willing to reinvest it.
And you kind of think the same thing of her.
Right. Yeah. As long as it's there, I'm going to reinvest it.
Yeah. There's a mutual trust. I mean, it's a really cool answer. And like you said, your mom's going to be super pumped to hear this because it's by the sounds of it, it's like, well, why would I want to force out a partner if they're truly contributing to this? Like, we're stronger together. Most of these conversations that I have that go negative is because it's the exact opposite. Kid has to come home for college because dad ran the family business into ground. So that is their first foray into the shop of like, I shouldn't be here. I didn't want to be here and I'm here to fix it. Also, a lot of people coming into businesses with debt. Like, I didn't pay you anything for this business, but I paid off $600,000 worth of debt that you had acquired, right? So I think that depending on what you kind of go into and, you know, the relationship there is probably going to change that. But the big thing I have here is it sounds like you guys still have an awesome relationship. People attempt to put me into family situations. When I was very, very young on this one, I did a valuation for three siblings, two brothers and a sister that they wanted to split up the business. Never, ever, ever will do it again. I got hate mail for 12 months. They said I broke up the family. So whenever anyone calls me about these situations, I will do valuations. It's some scale, but at the end of the day, what I tell people is you guys are family. You need to be able to show up on Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever it is, and still like each other. So whatever number I have in the back of my mind doesn't matter. So how do you have these conversations where it might be an easy conversation if there was no personal relationship, but at the end of the day, that's your mom or that's your stepdad. How do you put the family side stuff aside in the business? And the same flip side, when you guys aren't in the business, are you guys able to kind of shut that off and just be a family?
So I definitely think we're able to shut it off and be a family. You hit it on the head. And again, I want to just go back to the I'm blessed. It's been a great roller coaster. By all means, it's a roller coaster. There's always inherent risk in things. But I just think you saying it has like really put it in front of me of, I feel like this has been so much easier because we've had success, right? And to your point is, I never thought about that. Okay, if I came in here and we did have debt and then we had to go borrow and then we paid it off, then we did this, that there would be this almost convoluted feeling, right? Of like, well, who owns what or who got us to this point? And I just feel from the get-go, I walked into a really solid foundation I've just been really thankful for that. And I'm the first one to say anything. The podcast, friends, family, could not remotely do what my parents do. Could not have done it. I am not the bootstrappy, like, two employee, let's, you know, grind it for a year straight and just hope. In a sense, I think that first, right, true entrepreneur, the guy who says, I'm going to leave the dealership, put a lift in my backyard, and I'm going to grow this, right? I'm the first to admit, I'm not that guy. I can't do that. Somebody comes to me right now and is like, hey, you want to open up this thing with me? I'm like, I'll give you some ideas and maybe I'll help you here and there. But like, that is going to annoy me. That's really not me. And then the flip side of it, again, back to that mutual respect, because I think that my mom has seen, like, you know what? I was a really good, you know, pseudo founder and really great at getting this thing to have potential. But maybe I wasn't always, you know, going to be the best one to do that. And now I'm here for this ride as well. And it's been fun.
That's super cool. Cause like essentially, and you guys have restarted a couple times in your family, right? Like the listeners might not hear this. Maybe they'll edit it in there, but his great grandfather was doing this stuff back in the 20s, like hub and spoke, the PE model that we're seeing right now. But it's just kind of crazy to think of how this changes all through time, but then it stays relatively similar. One of the things that I'm kind of interested to hear here is like, there's a saying, the first generation starts it, the second one grows it, the third one kills it. One of the things that made me think of that, and I think of myself a lot too, is like, hey, I'm self-employed now. I didn't start from scratch. But starting from zero to build something out of nothing takes a unique individual. And it's probably not the individual that really knows how to scale that, right? They know how to create something from nothing. They know how to build it. They know how to have the vision. But then it's kind of cool to see you coming in there as a second generation of like, I could not have done what you guys did to start this. But also from my experience and my knowledge, you guys can probably not do what I'm about to do here next. You just have to hope that your kids aren't lazy and come in and ruin this one, right? But then, you know, it's kind of funny and I'm similar. Like my life's goal is to, you know, make a good life for my kids. Am I going to spoil them too bad? Where they're like, man, I don't have any sort of work ethic. Like some days I think yes, some days I think no, but you know, time will tell on that one.
Just a quick note on that for anyone who is a parent listening, I give it back to my mom. Again, immensely blessed life. I've not had, you know, a hard life at all. I think maybe just because she was a single parent for a lot of us early on growing up, I never thought that we were that successful, or not that successful, but just that we had this other expendable income or that we, you know, had these privileges or whatnot. It just kind of felt like, yeah, we're really safe and secure. And, you know, mom is able to take care of us and, you know, this and that. And I never thought that, yeah, like, life's sweet, I got this golden spoon. Even though, like you said, right, at times we were spoiled. And I think she just did such a great job of teetering on that of, I do want you to have opportunities. And the only way you can get opportunities at time is I open the door or because of my finances or right, those types of things. But I don't want you to ever take that for granted or to think that it came out of nowhere. And I think then too, back to it is, I just saw her working my whole life. So I knew where the money came from. It came from her leaving every day.
Lead by example. I have three daughters. I'm a kind of joke. My wife doesn't work. Well, she does. She raises the kids. But, you know, my oldest, I think she wants to be a cop. My youngest wants to be a vet for cute animals only. My middle one is like, I don't want to work. Dad goes to work. That doesn't look like fun. I want to stay home. So I'm like, you know what? Like, she's right in one aspect. Like, yeah, I mean, I like doing this and helping people. But if given the choice, right, no one wants to work. But like, how do you give that fine line of like, life is hard, you got to work hard, but like, I don't want it to be that hard for you. So it's tricky. Awesome. So one of the things here that was kind of a big overarching kind of theme in your email that we haven't touched on right now, and I'm not sure how close this was for you, but with the multiple locations, you guys have to still to this day be a very, very hot target for private equity. How did the conversation happen of like, hey, we are going to go this direction and not private equity? Was that ever in your radar? And like, what would you see for other people? Because family businesses with 3+ locations in 2026 is so, 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 so hard to sell to your kids unless you've done financially very well, because the number private equity is about to throw at you is going to cloud all judgment of whatever happened on Thanksgiving. So Did you guys ever get to that point? Was it ever even on the radar? Or, yeah, just talk to me a little bit about your foray into private equity.
And even backing it up, so 2017, my buddy tells me, why don't you give this family thing a try? I'm like, dude, it's tires. I'm an aerospace engineer. And he goes, you're not an aerospace engineer. Sorry to tell you that. You're in sales now and trying to become, right, like, into accounting. And so, like, you left engineering a long time ago. Don't fool yourself. And I think that I needed that, though, really. And he said, you know, so do you want to just go and build something for somebody else? Or you want to go try and build something for yourself? And I feel like that's what really resonated with me. And so when I talked to my mom at the get-go, I said, you know, first off, the business today doesn't sustain both of us. We will have to grow. More than happy to, you know, take the pay cut, come in. You know, I can't do what I'm doing now, but I think that if we grow it, it's going to be the best opportunity we can both go after. So she knew that from the get-go. Yep, I agree. I think that that's great. Let's do it. We're not going to grow just to grow, though, and we're not just going to grow when you come in. Like, kind of laid out it, you know, that's your expectation, and vice versa. My expectation is you're going to learn this business before we grow. And so we said, okay, let's do it. Let's do this 2-year trial. And I think that that almost set this spark in me that, you know, private equity or anything, nothing on the outside was going to really come into the picture at the start because we were just so excited to go do this ourselves. And again, blessed to have that we had, you know, the financial capital within our ecosystem to do that. Probably after store number 3 is when it really started to heat up. And now we're in, you know, around 22 or so when the phone calls started, the letters in the mail. Somehow people are getting our cell phone numbers, they're getting our email addresses. And you're going, gosh, like, is the, like, are we just so silly to think that we can do this our own, or that this is the best way to do it, or what's going on?
But then you're also like, we must be onto something because people are taking note of this, right?
Exactly. It's that twofold. You're going, okay, are we setting ourselves up for failure because we're going up against Goliath? Or are we the best David out there because we can still be small and nimble? And so I think that's what every owner sits and thinks about probably before they get serious. And it was just, I think they sent something in the mail. These guys had reached out a number of times. I think I kind of liked that they were a little more personalized in what they were writing and such. That was like, okay, they're at least taking some effort here, not just being like, hey, we see your website shows 3 stores.
They write decent letters.
Yeah.
I know the guys writing the letters. They're nice guys writing those letters.
Let's do it. Or what's a phone call going to hurt? And so talk to them, her and I, and what does this look like? What, you know, I'm only in my 30s. What, you know, what do I do now? And so it was interesting. I think it opened our eyes to what that may look like. And we got off the phone. We just kind of both looked at each other like, what do you think? And I think she was the first one who said, I'm still like, not maybe this, but like to the extent of, I'm still having fun. And I think she was like, I hope he doesn't say that this is the best idea or whatnot, right? And that she was like, I still want to go to work. I still want to, this is not a burden to me yet. Like, when I get burned out or I'm tired, whatever, like, let's have that conversation. But this is still fun. I love our people. We're having a good life, right? Like, at the end of the day, I think that's the one thing I would stress for anyone to think about. And again, there's the, you know, I'm not the prophet or the, you know, the perfect son or whatever, but
we're going to put a little halo above you right now. So while you say that, right?
So we sell now, and now we're going to grow with this other person or entity or whatever. And, you know, everyone so far has always said, yep, they would keep me on. Yep, you know, some of what we give you, we'd want you to roll in, all that. And I'm going, yeah, so what is, back to the kid thing even, I'm going, so what does life look like? And I'm only, you know, now I'm 35, like, what does life look like at 55? What is the next 20 years? So I help these guys build this thing. Maybe at times we don't agree on things. Maybe at times I get frustrated. I have a boss again. Maybe sometimes, you know, you just feel like, we did all this for whoever, a faceless thing down in Miami. And is that going to give you that same passion or that same spark? And on top of it, sure, maybe it, instead of getting to, you know, XX in front of the million, you get to XXX in front of the million. Is that the most important thing? Or if I do this for 20 more years and we do continue to grow, and maybe it's not as aggressive without that function or that assistance, do I still get a 20-year career? Do I still do really well? and we still can sell in 20 years. We still have that option, right? It's like, you know, you sell today, I just keep thinking, what's the better opportunity for the family overall? Sure, mom, dad, whoever's getting this big payout, they're sailing off into the sunset. But it's like, long-term, if we look out 2-3 more generations, was selling the business the best idea? Was that the best foot forward for our family? I think that's what struck me.
And I think we have a changing dynamic since 2022. Like 2022 wasn't that long after like Learn to Code. You know, coal miners are going out of business. Everyone is. And flash forward to today, AI is much, 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 much closer. Maybe already have to stealing my job that is looked at as like a white collar professional than to ever even change the oil in a car. So like, I think if you look at the trades in the future, you can see how hot private equity is on this side. But I love your idea of, right, like, hey, I have something that's not depreciating. If I want to sell it now or in 20 years, it's probably going to be worth the same, if not a lot more. The conversation that's a lot harder for people is you are an MBA, right? So you've done ROI, you've looked at this stuff. Was there ever something, because I don't want to assume what these guys threw out, but private equity does two things. They throw out big offers, they make money, and then maybe third is, you know, try and screw some people over. But these guys pay big bucks and they make big bucks. Was there ever something where you looked at this and just did an ROI of like, it's going to take me X amount of years to make this, maybe I should? Or was that one of your determining factors in not taking the offer?
So I probably was a little short-sighted in that analysis. Because to your point, yeah, I definitely looked at it like you just said. And I think at the end of the day, just my gut told me it's not enough. We're at a size that it doesn't matter. Get to your point, right? These crazy multiples. Oh my gosh, this is a stupid amount of money for what we're selling. But it's like, it wasn't enough for me to walk away. Then it's right. It's like, okay, well, then you just look at the, you know, the time scale of money. Like, okay, well, getting it lump sum today and then investing, all right, does it change this or that? And I think I was just looking at it like, if I'm walking away, I need to know. Like, this was just crazy.
You needed enough to say, I do not ever have to work. If I choose to get a job again, I can. But it had to be enough where, again, your age versus your mom. The number for your mom to ride away into the sunset might have already passed. She might be financially independent and be fine on it, you know. And so I think a lot of this kind of goes back to your own goals, your own initiatives. One of the things that you mentioned, and I tend to agree with, I shouldn't have already told you I agree with your side of this, but there's a lot of concern in this industry. I think if you went back 5 years ago, there was a large contingent saying like even individual car ownership's going away. It's all going to be EVs. It's all going to be fleet business. Get rid of all the retail stuff. And now flash forward to today of like, it's kind of gone back to classical repair. EVs are obviously having a little bit of trouble here. What do you see the next 10 years looking like for private equity? Do you see private equity buying your competitors as a good thing? Do you see it as a bad thing?
So just in general, I feel the industry itself has just so much opportunity and there is so much food to eat that, you know, somebody opens a discount tire down the street from us or a Costco, right? Even these big, I'm going, you know, we're not in a town of 10,000 people. There's just that much opportunity out there that, you know, sure, maybe it might hurt us, or we're going to just shift, or we're going to get smarter, or we're going to play the game different, or we're going to just hold in and hone in on our special sauce. And so I don't think I ever get scared from, then not just private, anything, even if it was another multi, you know, shop family business that was on the maybe the north side of Chicago and they bought something in our backyard. We're just too densely populated and it's just too much of a need for anyone to go, oh my gosh, they're going to steal my lunch. There's just too much out there, too much opportunity. I do believe, just from what I've seen, that we've had a number of places in our backyard sell to private equity, and we get some of their employees, we get some of their customers. You know, none of them have fallen on their face. They're all still open, but we do see a change from before private equity to after private equity. And
they definitely shed off some personnel, right?
We've never had an experience where going, oh my gosh, that really just took a gut punch when they came into town. And I just think it's just, we operate differently, right? And that's just going to stay that way. I do think there's been times where we're up against them in acquisitions and it gets really tough and it's hard. And there's a part of me too that, I guess back to, I'm not over anxious, or I don't have a board that's telling me, hey, we got to exit in 5 years. So if that owner is just solely set on money, top line number, how soon can I get it? All that, it's like, yeah, private equity is probably eventually, if it's toe to toe, they'll go up another multiple if that's what they got to do. And if that's all it's going to matter, I don't have the same bank account as them. So I'm more than happy to say, yeah, I don't care to get into a bidding war, but very happy to explain to you what I think life looks like for your employees, for your legacy, for your customers, if we do come in.
No, it's really good. And also, I've been doing this for 20 years, chosen 26, 20 years now, which is crazy to think about. I had never even heard of private equity in 2006. I knew what private equity was in 2016. We never saw even a shop talk to private equity at that point. Flash forward to last year, 50% of our sales were to private equity. It's crazy. It's really cool to see. The amount of money that we've had been people getting, like people really retiring like kings, it never was a thing. There was just not enough people that had deep enough pockets. Also, the amount of multi-shop owners, like you guys are a multi-shop franchise here, not franchise, but organization. I, as Joe Schmo working at a dealership, cannot do what your dad didn't go buy you out. You cannot have an independent person cash you out. And so also a lot of people are like, I hate private equity. It's like, well, you guys have built good enough businesses that private equity is now starting to take note. They are never going to buy your shop that does $800,000. They will buy your five locations that each do $800,000 in a heartbeat. This industry is now becoming investable, which I think is super cool. The part that I think that you guys still have a major advantage of is just look at the dealership. Why can you guys compete so well against a dealership, even though they have factory tools, everything, it's not even a profit center for them because they don't understand how business works, and to a large extent, they don't care. They do service because they have to do service. Private equity does car repair because it gives them the best percentage. I think that from a personnel side of it, that's probably the biggest thing. You guys, if a shop like yours sold, you have technicians that have probably been working there, probably some of the guys have been working there since your dad started this, and they are never going to leave your family. Now Brad and his mom are gone, like these guys are onto the market. So we've seen that offshoots for other people, but it's really hard. It's really hard, especially because, like I said, is if mom and dad didn't set this up well enough, you as the second generation, I've seen this in some instances, you're competing against private equity. And it's like, hey, the price for private equity cannot be the price for the kids. It does not make any sense. Very cool. So to wrap all this up, I think that one of the biggest takeaways that I had is probably beyond the business side of this is this all comes down to personal relationships. You have a family business, and if you have a good family business, you have to have a good family. So if you have someone out there that maybe doesn't have the best relationship or maybe has, a little bit of, strayed relationship with their family working right now, I'm sure that you've had times where it's been better or worse. What advice would you give to someone that's like, you know what? It's not perfect. We got kind of a crazy family. Brad, what is one thing that you can say this really helped us maybe open up the communication or just help things run smoother?
We say it to our teams, and I just think it's the key to communication. Be honest. And then on both sides, and be ready when you're honest and maybe, saying something somebody doesn't want to hear or vice versa, that hopefully they'll still be honest. They won't be vengeful or whatnot, but their honesty might, come back a little, might feel a little tough on you too. But if you never talk about it, if you never act like this is a part of the room, then how do you just like blindly walk through it? As an example, I would say to somebody that say, hey, listen, just first and foremost, I want to start with, I love you. You've done immense, things for me throughout my life, even before I was in the company. And I will never, be ungrateful for that. I love working here. I really think we have some good people, and there are some really crappy days, but there's a lot of really fun days. I go home fulfilled, and I really want more of that. And I really hope that we can get those days to outweigh the crappy days, because even at the top, there's still crappy days. But, here's what I'm feeling, or here's what I'm thinking, or here's a frustration point. And if you come out with that honesty of, I'm not saying this just because you got, I'm mad that you bought this or you did this or you said this or, you know, it's like, I love this. I don't want to see this go away. And with that, here's something that's been like really getting me down.
Yeah. No, I love it. I mean, open lines of communication. You want more productive technicians. Counter needs to be talking to the technicians. More technicians need to be talking to counter, right? You want your counter working better. You need to be talking to your counter. So it shouldn't be any surprise. You want better results with your partner, better relationship. If you see something, say something. And for those of you listening that are like, oh, I don't hold resentment, you do because you call and you tell me. Sonny calls me up and said, can you believe dad's doing this? And then dad calls me and says, you know what little Johnny's doing. So it's like, guys, stop calling your accountant, call each other, maybe sit down, talk a little bit. And if you guys are truly family through and through and business doesn't matter, then remember that, especially when the time comes to sell. So Brad, I cannot thank you enough for coming on here. I can't thank you enough for giving you a shout out of like, guys, I have this offer. You have a cool story. You have something that resonates with people. We want to hear it. So Brad, keep on what you're doing. Give a shout out to your mom. I have to meet your mom because she sounds like she might be the real star here. But yeah, just want to say, appreciate you coming on here.
No, absolutely. Thank you for having us. And as I said from the start, hopefully somebody listening or anybody listening just feels to take a little action, be it is, hey, dad, can we go sit in the office? Or, hey, mom, I got an idea. Or, hey, I never thought about this before. Maybe I do start talking about coming into the business. And I don't think it has to be second generation, too. I think I put that in my email, right? Is, you know, for owners to start thinking that it isn't just private equity and sale off, that could be a lead tech. It could be a star manager, somebody like that, that is coming in to have a really good opportunity. What you're selling is valuable.
You brought up a really good idea, Brad. It's like, hey, we're talking about this in family. Some of these people listed, you like that key employee more than you like your own children. The same way that you want to see their success, communication, open lines of communication, working together. Appreciate it, Brad. So if you're in the area and you need tires, you need service, check out Scotch U-Save. And more importantly, if you need a sweet Futura trailer, give Brad a call and he'll get you hooked up. So appreciate it, Brad.
Thanks, Hunt. Take care.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Brad. I know that I did and even learned a lot from it. So special thanks to Brad for being awesome. Special thanks to Brad's mom for being such a good role model for second, third generations, whatever you want to call it. And hope you enjoyed it. As always, please share with friends. And if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Don't forget to check out the Automotive Repair Podcast Network app and the rest of the shows on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. You can check it out on your favorite podcast listing apps as well. Thanks again for joining on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Have a question for Hunt? Check the show notes for Hunt's email or text Parmelis at 301-307-5413.